Jimmy's been messing with the microphone again. Is it working, Jimmy? Okay. Well, the good news is that you all can probably hear me this week. And then also, too, I'm looking out here. It's just family here today, at least from what I can tell. But it's good because I was actually going to start by saying, you know, this is one of those lessons that isn't for the faint of heart. This is one of those conversations, if you will, that we want to have as we continue to talk about healing. We want to have kind of just as a family. So it's fitting that it's just us today. I want us to really think about what we're going to look at here, because when at some point we get to a point where what it takes to heal is beyond just those surface level things and those things that we see on the outside. But what it takes for us to heal sometimes is to do some very hard things, some things that we may not necessarily even want to do, want to engage in. And I've had a lot of personal experience with healing over the past couple of weeks, in different ways, in different forms, things I thought I got rid of, they came back, and spent a few days not being able to talk. It was quite the experience. It was painful. But the point is that there were things that were necessary to do on my end, and we've been talking about what it is that we expect from God, how we have to place our faith in God, and sometimes we can just skip over the fact that that faith requires us to do something. And it's not always easy, and it's not always fun. Sometimes it's a very hard thing to do. And so I want to look at it today from the standpoint of what it is that Jesus does when he heals us. It isn't just the physical, which is what we need sometimes. But sometimes we have to dig a little deeper and get into the spiritual. And so that's what I want to look at today. The title of the sermon today is Two for the Price of One. Because oftentimes when we're asking God to work on our lives, when we're asking for that healing that we need to take away the pain, we can get so caught up on the pain part that we can forget where the pain even came from. That it came from a much deeper place that we need God to touch us in as well. Now, I want to start. There's a quote. I'm not exactly sure who started it or who it's accredited to, but it was so profound and very important. It's always stuck with me from the first time I read it or I heard it. It said, "The wound was probably not your fault, but the healing is your responsibility." The wound was probably not your fault, but the healing is your responsibility. And what does that mean exactly? We think about it from a spiritual perspective. What does it mean that the wound was not your fault? Well, very simply put, and we see this as Jesus was going along and traveling, and as he was healing people, it wasn't always that somebody did something to cause this pain to be inflicted on themselves, or even if it appeared that it was their fault. I mean, we can think about our own lives, right? Because we can see somebody and we can immediately look and think, why is this person in this pain? Why are they even in this situation? Well, it could have been how they grew up. It could have been how they were raised. It could have been things that were done to them when they were powerless and they had no control. And it creates wounds that are painful. It stagnates your growth. Sometimes emotionally, there are things you just can't get over. You know, if anybody's ever dealt with alcoholism or had it in your family, you know that, you know, sometimes people, they just live wild. But there are other times when people are drinking because they're self-medicating. They're trying to deal with something that's much deeper than just the alcohol. And the alcohol is more symptom than it is at the core, the root of the problem. And we go back to this where, again, The wound may not have been your fault. It could have been something that happened to you that caused you to have this grief and this pain and the residual effects. But it's your responsibility to get the healing. And part of that responsibility is we have to be willing to take it to God. Whatever it takes to get it to where God can fix it. I want to read a passage in Mark chapter 2. Starting in verse 1, it says, "A few days later, when Jesus again entered Capernaum, the people heard that he had come home. They gathered in such large numbers that there was no room left, not even outside the door. And he preached the word to them. Some men came, bringing to him a paralyzed man, carried by four of them. Since they could not get him to Jesus because of the crowd, they made an opening in the roof above Jesus by digging through it and then lowered the mat the man was lying on. When Jesus saw their faith, he said to the paralyzed man, 'Son, your sins are forgiven.' Now some teachers of the law were sitting there thinking to themselves, 'Why does this fellow talk like that? He's blaspheming. Who can forgive sins but God alone?' Immediately, Jesus knew in his spirit that this was what they were thinking in their hearts, and he said to them, 'Why are you thinking these things? Which is easier, to say to this paralyzed man, "Your sins are forgiven," or to say, "Get up, take your mat, and walk"? But I want you to know that the Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive sins." So he said to the man, "I tell you, get up, take your mat, and go home." He got up, took his mat, and walked out in full view of them all. This amazed everyone, and they praised God, saying, "We have never seen anything like this." We see this example. Many of us have read this before. This man who's paralyzed, he can't get around by himself. His friends can't seem to get him to Jesus because it's too big a crowd. There's too many people. It's nice to have friends, right? Some real friends who are willing to go the extra mile. But we'll talk about them in a couple of weeks and their faith. But what we see here is that even though this man, it doesn't exactly tell us how he got paralyzed. It doesn't tell us what were the conditions, whether it was his fault. Was he being reckless? Did he fall? We don't know exactly what it is that made him where he couldn't get around, where he couldn't walk. All we know is he had a mat, he had some friends that couldn't quite get to Jesus to be healed. They had the faith that Jesus could heal him, but they couldn't get to him. And as the story says, climbed up on a roof, which I don't know whose house this was, but you can imagine, thinking, wait a minute. What is that climbing on the roof, right? And who's digging a hole in it, you know? And they lower the man down. Think of the extreme example that this is, where they've gone to these lengths to get this man in front of Jesus to where he's in proximity, where he could touch him. And as we've looked at, you know, Jesus can heal even without seeing a person. You know, there are plenty of times where we see examples where Jesus says, "Hey, go on back home. Your daughter's healed. Your son's healed. Your mom's going to be okay." He sends them on their way. He didn't have to touch them. But this example is in here largely because we need to see that in order to be healed, that our faith has to be demonstrated, not just when we say we believe that Jesus can do it, but to what lengths are we willing to go to make sure that we get to Jesus? We also see here something very important that Jesus is pointing out as the people are kind of thinking to themselves, well, who does this guy think he is that he can forgive sins? People often place more value on the physical pain, the outward signs, the things that actually cause us pain in the moment than the spiritual condition. And Jesus is pointing out that, yes, of course, I have dominion here. I can heal anybody, but do we really want to be healed at the heart level? Do we really want spiritually to be healed? Because so often it manifests itself in destructive behavior when you're in pain. It manifests itself in physical ailments. People get so stressed, they're depressed, they're in anguish, they're hurt. There's lots of people who've been recently, they've been reaching out to me and they're wanting to deal with their issues, but they know it's an underlying spiritual problem. They know that there's an underlying spiritual problem that's causing some of their physical problems. You know, they recognize that their headaches or their upset stomach, their reflux, whatever it is, they realize that this is coming from something that's not purely just physical. It's because they still haven't gotten over the loss of their mother or their father. A young lady called me yesterday. She's distressed because she's wanting to leave her husband. And it's showing up because she's losing her hair. See, we look at the outward stuff. We see the physical things. And oftentimes we want Jesus to heal those things. And rightly so. But what Jesus is pointing out is we have to deal with the underlying condition. How did you get to this place? How do we fix what's at the root of all of this? What's at the root of this pain that you're in? It was interesting. This guy, how many of you recognize him? Somebody say the picture's too small? Well, this guy, his name is Jonah Hill. Jonah Hill was in a movie, 21 Jump Street, and Superbad, and a bunch of different movies. And it was interesting because Jonah Hill, when he first came in to Hollywood and got on the scene, he was a younger guy, but he was really big, really big. So big to the point that, interestingly enough, he did one movie. I can't remember the name of it, but they told him, we want you to actually be bigger. We want you to gain some weight, you know. And he said, he did an interview with Jimmy Fallon one time. He said, dude, I was already shopping in the Husky section anyway. Now you want me to gain more weight for this movie. And after this movie was over, he decided he had to do something. You know, he had to change his life and do something. So the co-star in the movie 21 Jump Street, guy named Channing Tatum, I think his name is. And, you know, he's a very fit guy. And he asked me, he said, so do you think if I eat less and get a personal trainer that it'll help me to be more fit? And he says to him, well, he used some profanity I won't use, but he was like, of course. Like, it's the simplest thing in the world, but you got to want to do it. You know, it's really easy. You know, the math is clear. You cut the calories and you burn the calories and you'll lose the weight. And everybody's like, yeah, but I like this. I don't want to change that. I'm not willing to do this thing. And so he goes on and he lost like over 100 pounds, I believe it was. And they asked him about it. He said, as simple as that advice was from his former co-star, he said it was actually very profound because he realized it was a lifestyle thing. He had to deal with why he was eating so much anyway. He had to figure out, why don't I exercise? Why don't I have a lifestyle that's more healthy? And oftentimes we have to do the same thing. Spiritually, we have to say, why is it that I don't pray as much? I don't give these things to God. Well, what is it that makes this particular thing, this particular sin, this particular part of my character, what is it that makes it so hard for me to give up? Why am I clinging to this? Why am I holding on to this thing? Why is this thing dogging me anyway? In Matthew chapter 23, starting verse 23, it says, woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You give a tenth of your spices, mint, dill, and cumin, but you have neglected the more important matters of the law. justice, mercy, and faithfulness. You should have practiced the latter without neglecting the former. You blind guides, you strain out a gnat but swallow a camel. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You clean the outside of the cup and dish, but inside they are full of greed and self-indulgence. Blind Pharisee, first clean the inside of the cup and dish, and then the outside also will be clean. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You are like whitewashed tombs, which look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside are full of the bones of the dead and everything unclean. In the same way, on the outside you appear to people as righteous, but on the inside you are full of hypocrisy and wickedness. We see here what Jesus is saying to these Pharisees. He's very upset. He clearly does not approve of them. But what is it that he doesn't approve of? Is he saying, I don't approve of your appearance? Is he passing judgment on them, saying, well, I just don't like the way you look? What is this about appearances and on the outside? No, what he's saying is, you're more concerned about what he or she is going to say about you, what they're going to think about you, how this is going to affect your image, than you are about dealing with the heart. He's telling them very clearly that the reason why you can't deal and you can't help, and that all your teachings and all the extra things that you're doing, the reason why they're not helping anybody is because on the inside, you're chasing after dead things. You're chasing after things that don't matter. He's pointing out something that's very significant, that healing starts from the heart. Shouldn't get preoccupied with the outward appearance. Because at the end of the day, when it comes to you and your relationship with God, your clothes, your skin, your hair, your body, these things, we'll say, they're all going to pass away. It doesn't matter what he or she thinks about you, or what they're going to say about you, or what their opinion of you is. Doesn't matter if somebody finds out that maybe you have something in your past that's horrible, it's horrific. See, whenever people go to counseling, whenever people have to deal with traumatic episodes and situations, the most difficult thing is to have to go back and dig through at the root of why they're having the trauma in the first place. See, sometimes we see the trauma, we see the outward stuff, we see people and the manifestation of their problems. We don't see the root of it. Jesus is telling them, you have to deal with the heart. You know, in your heart. It's not just that you're selfish. It's why you're selfish. What's at the root of why you're selfish? It's not just that you're bitter and that you've got a bitter root, or that you've got some type of grievance or a grudge that you're holding. It's why you're holding this grudge in the first place. Why do you have this problem with this type of person? Why is it so hard for you to love these people or those people over there? What is at the heart? Because on the outside, we can all say the right things and look the part and dress the part, but what's really at the heart of why it is you're in so much pain emotionally and spiritually? I saw this quote. I don't know who this was attributed to either. It says, I never knew how strong I was until I had to forgive someone who wasn't sorry and accept an apology I never received. And this is not to, you know, overhype the victim thing, but this is so true when you think about it. How do you move? Because see, here's the thing. Most of our spiritual pain and even some of our physical pain is rooted in grief and hurt and anger and disappointment that actually comes from a very spiritual place. It's rooted in something that maybe we, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 10 years ago, however long it was, we still don't want to deal with it. Ironically, this, not to disappoint Mark, this falls right in line with this movie that I was blessed and fortunate to take a bunch of kids to yesterday. Didn't start so well. I posted this on Facebook how 10 minutes in, they're giving this, you know, they're telling the whole story. This is kind of like what we all grew up on, except this was like the background information and all the things that he went through and everything else. But 10 minutes in, they're talking about how his heart was two sizes too small. And the story for the next hour and a half goes on to tell why his heart was two sizes too small. But right in the very beginning when they start saying this, my daughter, she says, oh, that explains a lot. Oh, okay. I see now why he's the Grinch. And he started doing some very mean behavior that you would expect from a Grinch. And my daughter then says, yeah, Daddy, you can kind of be, and nope, we're not doing this. But she was, you know, seeing the Grinch and some similarities that I had. But as the movie goes on, it gives all this background. It was the same characters, same people that we know, the Cindy Lou Who and Who Village and all this kind of thing. They, you know, they clearly got the protest because they had some diversity in Whoville and all this kind of stuff. But as you're going through the movie, they explain something that I didn't know. The reason why the Grinch was so mad and he was so angry is because the Grinch was an orphan. Grew up in an orphanage. And his first memory of Christmas when he was a little boy was all the other little kids spending time with their families and getting presents, and he had nobody to spend his Christmas with. So he just decidedly just said, you know what, I'm over it. And we look at that, and that was great. It was great that they put this in a way that kids kind of can see it in a cinematic way and be able to be captivated and understand that you have to be willing to be patient, have compassion, and love people even though they do mean things to you. But it got me to thinking, how much spiritually are we being restrained and held back because we haven't dealt with something, some pain, some hurt? We haven't let God fix it for us. We're still in that place. And we may not consciously think it, even in the movie. The Grinch, he wasn't consciously thinking, you know what, I'm just ruining everybody's Christmas and being a Grinch because I just don't like people. At one point, he even got a little introspective. He started thinking about it, and finally it came to him because he remembered being that little boy who didn't have. How many of us have that something where our faith could be increased, we could grow spiritually, we could get closer to God, we could help other people get closer to God, but we've yet to deal with something that happened so long ago? We look at Jesus and all the miracles. Notice there were people who have been dealing with things for years, sometimes decades. When that pain lingers, it comes from somebody that you love, it's something that hurts, we have to ask ourselves, at what point do we say that even though that wound, even though that pain, even though that trauma was not something that I brought on myself, it may not have been something that I created for myself, at what point do I take faith as a responsibility and give it to God? Final passage we'll look at is John chapter 5. Starting in verse 8, it says, then Jesus said to him, get up, pick up your mat and walk. At once the man was cured. He picked up his mat and walked. We'll pause there for just a second. Think about this. It says, get up, pick up your mat and walk. What is he doing there? He's saying, okay, I've given you what you need. Now it's on you to do something with it. The responsibility is now on you to get up and walk. Continuing on, it says, the day on which this took place was the Sabbath, and so the Jewish leaders said to the man who had been healed, it is the Sabbath. The law forbids you to carry your mat. But he replied, the man who made me well said to me, pick up your mat and walk. So they asked him, who is the fellow who told you to pick it up and walk? The man who was healed had no idea who it was, for Jesus had slipped away into the crowd that was there. Later, Jesus found him at the temple and said to him, see, you are well again. Stop sinning, or something worse may happen to you. The man went away and told the Jewish leaders that it was Jesus who had made him well. Jesus didn't just give him the responsibility of getting up and carrying on with his life and walking. He didn't just say, pick up your mat. But when he sees him again, he says, stop sinning, or something worse may happen to you. It is appropriate for us to understand, it's appropriate for us to recognize and give praise and be grateful that we have access to God. We know who God is, that we can be healed. But it's also incumbent upon us to make sure that we go about life in such a way that we stop sinning so that something worse may not happen, as we see with this man. The appropriate response to being healed by God is to not only worship, to not only demonstrate through your life how grateful you are, but it is also to repent. Because we can't just offer the excuse, well, because of my childhood, because of what I went through, because of that painful relationship I had, that is why I'm here. Jesus is telling this man the same thing he's telling us. There is no excuse to continue in this life. Because I'm here to heal you. I'm here to take that pain away. There is no excuse for you to continue to live the same way. Well, yeah, but if you only knew how bad my marriage was. But if you only knew how bad it was for me back in school. If you only knew what I went through with my dad. And Jesus is saying, yes, but I can heal you from that, and there's no excuse for you to continue to live in sin, because oftentimes that sin is a coping mechanism. It's how we deal with pain. We're self-medicating through sin sometimes. And he's saying, no, you don't have to do that anymore. It's incumbent upon you to show your faith by also repenting. We'll close here, a few questions. How do I respond to God's general presence and healing hand on my life? How have I responded in the past? How do you respond to God when he has healed you? Do you respond by saying, I want to be that much closer to him? Or like we talked about last week, do you respond by saying, well, man, it took you long enough? Because sometimes, you know, you might think, you know, well, is that really the appropriate response? Appropriate or not, sometimes that's how people respond. They think, well, what took you so long, God? Instead of saying, I'm so grateful that God has healed me that I'm going to sin no more. Am I more concerned about the underlying conditions to my health or how they present to others? And this is both physical and spiritual. Are you more concerned about what it looks like to other people or how other people view you? Or are you more concerned about what is causing this in the first place? What is it that's underneath all of this? Because, see, the underneath thing, that's something that nobody can see. That's something that unless you tell people, unless you open up, or unless a person is really close to you, they may not be able to see what is causing this pain in the first place. All they see is that you're angry, or that you're grumpy, that you're the Grinch. All they see is that you're sad. All they see is the manifestation of this underlying pain. And so we want to wipe the tears away. We want to come here on Sunday, and we want to look the part instead of seeking to be healed. You could come and pray with your brothers and sisters like we read about and find that healing, but you don't want to expose yourself to other people's criticisms or other people's opinions. And so you come here and you wear the best face possible instead of cutting the roof open and getting as close to Jesus as you can. Because you want to make sure that nobody sees you the wrong way. You know, it's like, well, I don't want people to think I'm rude, so I don't want to push through the crowd. I don't want this man to get mad that I just cut a hole in his roof. It's like we're more desperate for approval of man than we are desperate to get healed. We're willing to pay the price of being in pain and not getting the healing that we need, and so we won't open up. We won't be vulnerable. We're willing to pay that price instead of just saying, well, maybe I'm going to have to pay this man for his roof, but I'm going to get healed. Well, maybe I'm going to have to pay somebody to carry me up on top of the roof and lower me in, but I'm going to get healed. I'm going to get close to God. Are we more concerned about what people think about our condition or about what's underneath that condition and how we're going to get the healing? Are there some false teachings that I need to reassess and break away from in order to heal? Have I been unwilling to let go of toxicity in my walk with God? And where do I need to start? Now, I say this and I bring this up from the standpoint of false teaching, because when we look back on the Pharisees and why Jesus was so angry, it wasn't just because they were a little pompous and proud. No, you've got what was roughly 600, and depending on how you combine, about 631, I think it was, laws that God had given people and expected them. And once you kind of realize how they're all put together, it really wasn't like 631 laws. They were all kind of connected in some way. And yet, what the Pharisees were doing were saying, no, you need to observe these to the letter, but then we've got these other things we need you to do as well. You know, we need you to come and do this ceremonial thing. That's not in the law, but that's expected of you. And so they were heaping on all these extra expectations. You know, we joked about this earlier, and often this comes up, but I remember having a very important, very heartfelt conversation with Tom one time about how we dress and how we look when we come to church, you know, and what's appropriate attire. And we think about how we don't say this to ourselves, but sometimes if we, you know, don't look the best, or maybe we got a little cough or a sneeze, like, well, I don't want to inconvenience anybody, so I'm not going to come and be a part of the fellowship. I'm not going to come to church. Or, well, I don't want to really be the one person that stands out, so I'm not going to bring this thing up, even though I really believe that this is a problem or this is causing me some pain. And so we look at these false teachings because, you know, we can think to ourselves, well, you know what? Isn't it inappropriate for such and such a person to do this, especially during church? Isn't it inappropriate for this person to say this type of thing? Well, isn't it inappropriate for the minister to come down here and, you know, take a stool and sit down there? Shouldn't he stand up here? We have it in our mind that, excuse me, there are certain things that are expected, and we need to break away from those things. Because just like the Pharisees were doing to the people, they were burdening them more than they were helping them to heal. That's what was so great about what Jonah Hill was saying, that Channing Tatum said to him, where he says, it's actually the most simple thing in the world. It's really just that simple. Sit down, figure out what you're going to eat every day, count the calories, do some exercise so you burn more, and then you'll lose the weight. And as simple as that is, sometimes people add all these other things that you have to do. Well, you know what? Maybe you just need to go home and get some rest and take a couple weeks off. Well, yeah, but the expectation is that I also do this and this and this and this. And God's saying, I didn't tell you that was an expectation. I didn't tell you that this was how you had to do it. Sometimes we have to go back and realize what we were taught by our parents or what we were taught by other people who maybe we respected. Could have been other preachers and other, you know, teachers from some other churches. I don't know. I'm sure it wasn't here. But the point is, we have to be willing to go back and reassess and ask ourselves, are we burdening ourselves with things that God really doesn't expect? What's underneath this pressure that I feel? And finally, have I placed a higher value on my physical, social, or financial status than on my spiritual health? Is my heart sick while the outside appears to be well in the eyes of others? I bring this up because notice that Jesus tells the guy as he's walking away, he sees him again and he says, see, you're well, repent. Otherwise, something worse may happen. Because sometimes, you know, you get that healing, you get out of that financial burden, or you get out of that physical problem that you've been having, or, you know, you get the job, whatever it is you're looking for, you get that thing, you get that relief, and you forget that you still have to live a life worthy of Christ. You still have to live a life worthy of the calling that we all have. And we have to ask ourselves, do I really value my spiritual health more than I value all the other things in the way that it may appear? Are you in a situation where you need help with that? You know, I joked about this during the class this morning, but the fact of the matter is, yeah, a lot of people don't want to come forward. They don't want to come forward because, you know, I don't feel like getting up, or I don't want to get up in front of the whole church. But, yeah, you can hand in a card. You can make your request to the elders or just one of your other brothers and sisters. But how much do we actually do that? How much do we say, well, yeah, I may not come forward during the song of invitation we're going to have here in a minute, but am I willing to make my request known that I need this healing? Are you willing to do that? Or is it, I don't want people to judge me. I don't want people to look at me wrong. I don't want people to know. It's kind of hard to keep it private when you cut a roof open and your friends lower you in. Who knows? Maybe that man, maybe because of his faith, maybe because of shame, who knows what it is, maybe he wouldn't have done it. Do you love somebody enough to cut the roof open for them and drop them in? Do you love somebody enough that you'll bring them kicking and dragging and screaming to God so that they can be healed? Where are we at today when it comes to being healed? And how much does it matter to us as opposed to what other people think? The challenge for us today is to make sure that what matters most is the heart, not the appearance. If you need that type of healing, if you're in a place where you need the prayers of the church and you want to make it known, we ask that you come forward as we stand and sing our song.